Welcome to In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means it is time for our weekly visit with Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health from the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
And joining us again, Jenny Vandermeer, the Vaccine Manager. That's the hat you're wearing today, Jenny. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Bob.
We're going to get to you, Jenny, in just a moment, but we will be starting off with Dr. Lee as well. I know you've got to run again. You're busy, busy, busy. But we want to break down the weekly numbers. We'll start with the COVID outbreak status and see what you can tell us. I saw the numbers were pretty much flat. There wasn't too much of a change.
Yeah, so we are continuing our trend that we've been seeing for the past, I'm trying to think, I think it's been 2 months now, actually, that we've been having falling COVID-19 transmission numbers. So the number of people who are positive and get tested, what we're seeing, like we saw in previous weeks, is that there's more flu circulating in our region than COVID-19. And now we have some more up-to-date provincial numbers as well. And we do have the distinction, for better or for worse, of having more flu in our region and less COVID in our region compared to the Ontario average. So we do continue to have COVID-19 in our region. I definitely want to not dismiss COVID-19, as we all shouldn't. We do continue to have people who are in hospital due to COVID-19. We do continue to have outbreaks with cases in congregate settings due to COVID-19. So it's still very much in the region, but we are seeing falling transmission of COVID-19 and definitely continuing to see high rates of flu in our region, which is certainly the dominant circulating respiratory pathogen in our region right now.
And we have to mention too that there were two more who passed away from COVID-19 related illness in hospital this week. It's always difficult to report that number, but again, it just sort of underlines the fact that people who are highly susceptible to this virus are in danger.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of things, sort of, I guess, the inner workings of these viruses. And one of the things that you wanted to discuss today was how our immune system works with respect to immunization and exposure to viruses. This is something I really want to know about because I've been dealing with this cold or whatever for a good 2 weeks now. My grandson, he's been dealing with it for a good 2, maybe 3 weeks as well. It's in our house. I know everybody, pretty much everybody I know, is dealing with some sort of cold or virus or something right now. So what can you tell us about all this?
Yeah, so 'tis the season for respiratory viruses. Certainly this year, as we've talked about on the show before, we're having more circulation than especially a flu than we would have had in previous years. Usually it doesn't start circulating to this degree until December or even in January and February. In terms of the way that the immune system works when we have these respiratory infections is that when your immune system encounters these new pathogens, then it does react, but it can take a little bit of time. So first they have to sort of recognize the pathogen, and then they have to mount a response and to create many cells and many proteins to respond to these pathogens. And if you're encountering these pathogens for the first time, and you also haven't been vaccinated against these pathogens, then it takes longer for the immune system to react, because it takes longer to, the immune system has to create these cells and these proteins completely new, because they've never seen this pathogen before. The way that the vaccine works, or previous exposure to this exact same pathogen, the way it works is that the immune system does actually encounter that new antigen, is what is called in the technical sense, either from the vaccine or from infection, and it mounts this response. It takes about 3 days to maybe even up to a week to start mounting that response, depending on specific things for a person, so their health condition, their age, etc. And then once they mount the response, that's what oftentimes gives you the fever, is your immune system actually mounting that immune response. The body aches, and then it does fight off the infection after a number of days. And then the immune system is smart, right? So it keeps some of those cells that it created during that infection around, so that, and some of those proteins as well, so that the next time in the future, if you ever encounter this pathogen again, then it already has those cells and the proteins in the body to mount a response much faster. And so that second response, if you've been, the technical term here is if you've been primed previously, then that second response can take hours to days. It is a much shorter time for the immune system to react. And so that's how vaccines work, is that it introduces that antigen to your body early, and in a way that doesn't cause that full-on infection. Your immune system reacts to it, and that's why, for example, sometimes vaccines can cause a fever or chills, or to make you feel crummy. It's because your immune system is reacting to it. And then after your immune system reacts to the vaccine, then it keeps those cells and proteins around for if they encounter that antigen again, which is how it prevents infection in the future, is that once it sees that antigen again from the infection, then it knows, oh, we need to respond, and it responds really quickly within hours or days.
It's kind of like when mom sent you off to school on a winter's day, she'd put a toque on you and maybe said, well, you might be warm now, but you're going to be cold in a few minutes. You're going to need this, right? So it's that extra layer of protection that gets thrown in the mix.
Yeah, it's preparation, right?
Yeah.
Like it's thinking about what might happen in your body down the road rather than necessarily what's happening right here, right now.
Now, because people are dealing so much with all these different viruses that are going around, like, and I can use my family, my friends as examples. I know I don't have COVID, at least by the, I don't know, 300 tests that I've taken over the past little while. But nonetheless, I know that it isn't COVID. It could be flu, it could be RSV, it could be just a common cold that's going around. I did have my flu shot and feel good about that, of course. But when people start to see symptoms come, how are they supposed to tell the difference?
Yeah, so the first thing to know is oftentimes you can't tell the difference. The way to tell the difference oftentimes is a test. And as we all know, our eligibility for testing is variable. So some people are eligible for the COVID-19 or flu tests, and some people are not. And so for some people, having a test is not necessarily something that they'll have access to. For those who don't have access to testing, or those who choose not to be tested for whatever reason, then sometimes you can, have a suspicion in your mind as to what you have based on the symptoms alone. I'll say for COVID-19, it's really hard to tell, because COVID-19 can really run the gamut of symptoms from, I mean, many people are asymptomatic, so they have no symptoms. Sometimes
True,
it's
yeah.
very, very mild. And you may have an afternoon of cough or a fever for a day, and then it goes with no other symptoms. Or for COVID-19, it can be something really like a cold, where you have the cough and the runny nose and all of that, or even the fever for multiple days and being bedridden for several days. So COVID-19 really runs the gamut. That's really hard to tell. For cold versus flu, sometimes you can tell based on the symptoms. And this is where, there's no black or white, but flu is more likely to cause fevers, and chills, and really knock you off your feet for several days. and less likely to cause a cough. And the cold is more likely to cause a cough and less likely to have that really severe. So you may have a fever, it may be for a day or two. You may have symptoms for a shorter period of time. For both the cold and the flu, you can have changes to your voice and or a cough for rather a long time after you've had the infection come and go. And that has to do with the physiology of the way that the cells in your throat actually react to the infection. So the infection itself may be gone, and you may still have some symptoms. And actually, I should say COVID-19 is the same. All of these respiratory viruses. But in general, the difference between the cough and the flu, it is what I talked about, but also hard to tell as well, right? Like, so the flu can cause a cough. The cold can give you quite severe symptoms and knock you off your feet for several days as well. It does depend. But the other thing I want to emphasize in here is it's not necessarily that useful to know which pathogen you have, because it actually doesn't make a huge difference in what you do, right? So the one thing where it does make a difference is COVID-19, where if you have COVID-19 and you are eligible or you think you would benefit from antivirals, then there's that treatment for COVID-19. For most people with the flu, there is an antiviral for flu. For most people, it doesn't make a big difference, and most people are probably not going to benefit from that antiviral, in which case the treatment, quote, or the thing to do for the flu and most other respiratory pathogens is the same, which is resting, staying at home, trying to avoid encountering other people and transmitting to other people, and taking care of yourself. So taking a bit of rest, taking medications that help with your fever, drinking lots of water, getting food in you as much as you can, even though oftentimes you lose your appetite. All of those things are what you do for the cold or for the flu. It is the same, and it does pass.
Yeah,
For
it does.
people who are symptomatic, usually it's a matter of days, but it can make you feel crummy for a while afterwards, and that's part of the infection, unfortunately.
I heard that for women, it can be like 3 to 5 days, and for men, it can go on for 90 days to a year. The man cold is what that is officially called.
I'll say from a medical point of view, I will not comment on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Fine. And I won't get you to comment on a personal point of view either, because I think that I would lose. Now, before we let you go, actually, I want to bring you in on something with Jenny in a moment. But before we let you go, holiday gatherings, we're coming up. It's going to be right around the corner. We're going to talk about this, of course, in the weeks to come as well. But we just want to, just the broad strokes right now, if you could, doctor, things that people need to start thinking about, because we're all planning those gatherings now.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'll emphasize the most of all the elements to consider is if you do get sick, please stay at home. For the sake of our community, for the sake of other people going to these gatherings, please stay at home if you're sick. I know people are eager to go out and see friends and family who they haven't maybe seen for a little bit or a long bit. But if you're sick, please, to protect others who are going to that event, stay home, and don't go. I think that's my main message today. Other things that we can do is, of course, get vaccinated as an element to prevent you from getting sick, and to sort of give you better chances of being able to make it to all of those holiday events. So getting the COVID-19 and flu vaccines will decrease your risk of infection, and certainly help to protect other people around you, and not just your family, but also as we're talking about these holiday gatherings and parties, being able to help protect others around you in that way too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you touched on a big one there. You don't want to have people bring illness into the region, and you don't want to, send those kids who are coming home from college or whatever back with the Lanark flu, to go and spread it elsewhere, right? So definitely something to keep in mind. And we are going to be talking about this as we get closer to the holidays. They're right around the corner. I mean, Christmas is less than a month away. But one thing I wanted to speak to both of you about, Jenny, if we could bring you in on the conversation here too, is I know that we've seen this shortage of children's medication in the region. And Jenny, you have children. Dr. Lee, you have tons of experience. When someone doesn't have access to that medication, what do they do? Because it can be a very scary time for a parent if your child is having a fever and you're used to just, giving them the dose of that children's Tylenol and things go down. If you can't find it, I know it's starting to trickle in now, but it's still pretty hard to come by. But if you can't find it, what are some of the things that you can do to help your child feel better, from the health unit's point of view? Dr. Lee, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I'll say certainly we're seeing a shortage of these medications across the world, unfortunately, not just in our region. Some things to keep in mind. One is the important things are not just decreasing the fever, but also looking at the symptoms that your child has. So, are they eating? Are they able to drink lots of fluids, which is really, really critical. And I think that's actually one of the most important elements is drinking fluids and having being able to eat, even if they don't want to, for their health and to keep their energy up. As well, I think lots of people talk about, if you have a fever, to snuggle up in bed with a big blanket and then and get your temperature up and then the fever will break. So that's not recommended. So actually what I would recommend is decreasing the fever as much as possible or decreasing that temperature in sort of reasonable, gentle ways, right? Like, so in the absence of fever medications, something like making sure that you're not putting on too much blankets or putting on too much clothing. So indoors, taking, especially for kids that aren't able to dress themselves, keeping an eye on their temperature, and sort of dressing them accordingly. And then as well, here fluids makes a really big difference. So having something cold or cool to drink, that will decrease your internal temperature. And as well, if you're really concerned, please don't hesitate to seek medical attention. If your child is having a fever for several days and it doesn't seem to be going, if the kid is not eating or drinking well, if they're the word that we use is if they're lethargic, so if they're sleeping well beyond what you think is okay. So people do get more sleepy. I certainly get more sleepy when I'm ill. But still being able to eat and drink, still having attention, all of those things are important. And if you see that that's going, in a kid who's ill, then please don't hesitate to seek medical attention. One of the tricks that I can say is calling Healthcare Connect is a really useful way to get a little bit of information. They often it's a quick and easy call with them just to assess how sick, and to provide reassurance or to say, no, really, you should seek medical attention. The caveat being that, like other clinical services, right now in this season, they are quite overloaded. And so, please don't hesitate to seek out that clinical or assessment or attention.
Apple juice popsicles are awesome. And I've actually seen a 3-year-old say no thank you to popsicles because he had had too many of them. So that's something that's good. Jenny, you were nodding your head quite a bit as the doctor was speaking.
I know it can be really difficult as a parent myself too when those products are not available. Thankfully, we are starting to see more procurement coming in. I was at a couple stores yesterday, and the shelves are starting to fill up, which is really good. And I know that a lot of the stores are starting to put limits and caps on purchasing of these products. So just I caution parents that if there's not already those limits, just take what you need, so that there's lots available for other parents to be able to get as well. And when there's products not available, like Advil, acetaminophen, and Motrin and Tylenol, all those things, is that you can speak to the pharmacy too. There are compounding pharmacies, so they're a bit of a different specific type of pharmacy, but they can actually make some of those pain and fever medications on site as well. So always good to check with the pharmacy to see what they re with the pharmacist to see what they recommend.
Absolutely. And what about, just as we're talking about things, what about like sort of like a cooler bath for kids who have a fever, not cold. And then, I'm not talking about, something that you would chill your beer in or anything like that. But of course, like you talk about not wrapping them up in blankets and so on and so forth, but if you can get them playing in the bath.
Yeah, absolutely. So the key concept here is gentle temperature adjustments, right? So like you said about having a popsicle, so it is very, very cold, but it's only so much of it. Having a bath in cool water, or showers, or even having just water bottles that are of frozen water, so that they can drink throughout the day. All of those things are helpful.
Oh, great idea.
And the idea is to have sort of cooling that's inside the body, so that's things that you eat or drink, and then cooling that's outside the body, so that's things that are sort of on your skin. And really critically, again, I'll emphasize, so nothing too drastic. So no ice baths. Certainly not something that we're recommending people do at home, but cool water enough that it's comfortable. Something that's, if it's cold water and your kid feels uncomfortable in it, then maybe bring the temperature up just a little bit more. Those are things that I think would help, but also keeping in mind that really it's the length of fever and also really, really high fevers that are of concern. If a kid has a fever, it does feel crummy, but most fevers are not damaging, and if they're going without medication, oftentimes it's the medication is for comfort, but not necessarily because it's a particular risk to have the fever in terms of their health.
That's really good to know. I didn't realize that. Dr. Lee, I know you need to run. I want to thank you again for taking the time to speak with us. I took you off track there a little bit, but I know our listeners would appreciate it, and we'll look forward to speaking with you
Absolutely.
next week.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. Dr. Lena Lee, the Medical Officer of Health, has been with us for the first part here of this In Focus, and you have heard her voice a few times already. Jenny Vandermeer, Vaccine Manager with the Health Unit as well. A couple things to touch on with you. I think this is good news. You are scaling things back come January when it comes to the vaccination efforts in Lanark Heights and Granville.
Yeah, it's actually a bit surreal in some ways,
Yeah.
but we are planning to scale back from our mass clinic settings, or style of clinics that we've been running since, my goodness, February of 2021, I think, is when we first our first mass clinics. So we're just going to be moving to smaller in-house clinics. So in our office settings, we will still make the vaccine accessible, and having points of access for people to get their COVID vaccines. We know that kids will inevitably always be coming due, depending on their ages, depending on when they're due for future doses and booster doses. So we want to make sure that we're getting those kids into our clinics, as well as for adults who haven't opted to get their booster yet for the fall, perhaps because of a COVID infection. And it is recommended for the healthy individual, if they've had a COVID infection, to wait 6 months before they get their next dose. However, people can get it as early as 3 months. But again, we want to really encourage people that if they're healthy, otherwise healthy, and and have had a COVID infection, that they can wait 6 months to get their next booster dose. So we know that there are going to be, people kind of rolling in throughout the winter months that are still coming up due for their vaccine. And so they'll be able to still access that, but it'll be in a smaller scale. So we'll be offering vaccine clinics at all of our office sites in Smiths Falls, Almont, Kempville, Brockville, and Gananoque. And also just to note too that many of our pharmacies in some of our smaller and larger communities are still offering vaccines. So that's a really great access point for people to get their COVID vaccine through pharmacy, as well as many of our primary care providers are also offering it as well. So one thing to point out when we do start to scale back in January is that we will no longer be able to have walk-in appointments available, as people are accustomed to with our mass clinics. And that's just to control the flow and the volume that we have coming into our clinics with less staff and less space. So it's going to be really important that if you're coming due for your COVID booster or any other dose, that you make an appointment come January. And we will continue to use our online booking portal for all of our those clinics. People will notice that they will be identified by the clinic office location. As always, for parents that are booking their child in that are between the ages of 6 months to 4 years of age, these appointments do need to book through our call center, not through the online booking portal. And that will continue in January as well.
All right. And part of the reason behind this is that you're focusing the shifting, or sorry, you're focusing on school catch-up clinics to make sure that, not only COVID-19 vaccinations are in the arms of kids, but that they're up to date on other things.
Yeah, unfortunately, COVID has had a big impact on keeping our students up to date with their routine school immunizations that we typically start in grade 7, and these are always done in the school. So we have many kids that have fallen behind on these routine immunizations. We were able to offer throughout the spring and summer, we did offer school catch-up vaccines in our community COVID clinics. But now we're at a point where we can get back into the schools and start offering them in the schools. We know that it's more accessible for families to be able to just have their kid receive these vaccines in school. The vaccines that are available are the meningococcal vaccine, which is a one dose vaccine, hepatitis B, which is a two dose series, and HPV, which is a two dose series as well. Because we're so behind on catching a lot of these kids up, we also have kids that would be in grade 10 to 12 now that are also likely due for their Tdap booster, and that's their tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis vaccine. So we're also making that available at our school clinics for those kids that are eligible. Under the Immunization of School Pupils Act, students are required to receive the meningococcal and the Tdap booster. Hepatitis B and HPV strongly recommended that all children receive this as part of the school program as well. What happens is that there is a cost involved after they graduate. So for kids that are going to post-secondary or choose to get a couple of these vaccines later in life, they will have to pay out of pocket for them, and it is quite costly. So we do strongly recommend that they get them while they're available in the schools.
Absolutely. So I think that pretty much covers that off. I know that there's going to be some clinics coming up too. It's like everything else with the health unit, you're making things as easy as possible for everyone involved, right?
That's right. Yeah, we have five clinics planned before Christmas break at five different schools. We're at SFDCI today, Thousand Island Secondary School, PDCI, St. Mike's in Kempville, and St. Mary's in Brockville are all planned before the end of the year. The focus will be on starting with the grades 9 to 12 first. We want to make sure that we get them all caught up before they graduate. In January, we'll be visiting more schools and working our way through the grades. And then we will start on the grade 7 and 8 students. So I know lots of parents are calling and asking questions about that. Don't worry, we will be getting to all the schools. It is a big feat right now, though, for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot that you need to catch up on, that's for sure. And then another big question that parents often have, there are still some parents out there who do not want these vaccinations, so there's a matter of consent involved. You're not just
That's
going to go
right.
and, you're not just going to go and do this.
No, we do require in the school setting, we do require consent from parents. So for those five schools that I've listed, those consents have already gone out to students. I strongly recommend, especially for that age group, they don't like to empty their backpacks out at night. So make sure that you are checking your student's bag for those. They've also gone out electronically through the schools. And we also have the forms online that you can download and fill out as well. So it's really important that you do get those consents and send them back into the school. We know that families are feeling a lot of vaccine fatigue right now. It has been a challenging couple of years for families, but it's really important that we do keep our kids protected in the schools, especially against some of those extreme diseases like the meningococcal diseases.
Well, we're just about out of time here, Jenny, but I know you wanted to share that there are some resources available just a click away, as we say, on the health unit's website and other places as well.
Yeah, so there's a whole section on our healthunit.org website for school, the grade 7 immunizations. But I wanted to just share a resource that we are really promoting as well right now, and it's through the Scarborough Health Network, and it's called the Vax Facts Clinics. They're a team of licensed physicians that are offering free over-the-phone consults to anyone with questions and concerns about vaccinations, anyone who just wants more information. They are providing information on COVID-19 vaccines, childhood vaccines, flu vaccines, as well as questions about monkeypox or preventative health counseling. So, for any families that are really questioning whether their child needs these vaccines, what are the benefits for them? If you're not getting the answers over the information we have on our website, you can have a consult with one of these physicians. It is free, OHIP's not required, and you can book yourself an appointment right online with one of those physicians, and they have very accessible hours, open 7 days a week. So that information is also going to be posted on our website, and we'll be sharing some more information through social media on that as well.
Awesome. Well, Jenny, it's always a pleasure to have you along here on In Focus. We really appreciate it. We look forward to your next visit.
Thanks so much, Bob.
You're very welcome. Jenny Vandermeer, Vaccine Manager with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit here on this edition of In Focus. And of course, before speaking with Jenny, we were speaking with Dr. Lena Lee, our Medical Officer of Health. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.